Is Shohei Ohtani washed? We'll debate that and a lot more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
So much to get to on this Friday. Ohtani goes 50-50. The postseason races are coming down to the wire, and we say goodbye to the teams that will not be joining us in October. It's Friday. It's Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows Shohei Ohtani getting 10 RBI in a game isn't that impressive. Scooter Gennett did that once. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and it's actually pronounced Jeanette.
Yeah, it is. And while Ohtani was unable to record that fourth home run, I think we're all going to be just fine because of it. Maybe in the future, I have a feeling the next time he goes to Marlins Park, since he sure loves to perform historic feats at the old Lone Depot, I think that will be the next time we'll be on Ohtani for home run watch. Jake, good morning.
Good morning.
We originally, 48 hours ago, when Shohei Ohtani was still a couple homers and a couple steals away from 50-50, we were looking at this Friday episode and we said, we're going to say goodbye to the bad teams. And we're still going to do that because I think it's a fun exercise and a good time to kind of shuffle those teams into the winter.
But however, then Shohei Ohtani said hello to one of the worst teams with an all-time performance yesterday on Thursday.
Yes.
That propelled him past the 50 home run, 50 steal mark, becoming the first player in baseball history to accomplish such a feat. And so the first segment of today's show will be celebrating that accomplishment. Jordan, before we hop into some specifics, can you just read out Ohtani's line from yesterday, his batting line?
Yes. So Mr. Ohtani yesterday in a 20-4 victory in a baseball game over the Marlins of Miami, went 6-for-6 already. Again, 6 hit games, don't have those very often. 3 home runs, 2 doubles, 2 stolen bases, and as you mentioned, 10 runs batted in. That is a 16 total bases for the day. 10 of the 20 runs were driven in by Ohtani, the leadoff hitter. 10 RBI from a leadoff hitter is hilarious. And this game was just an avalanche of fun facts. For all of this to happen at once, you know, this has been kind of a slow build, a gradual march towards this milestone previously thought to be unthinkable, unfathomable, unreachable. And remember, this dude hit a walk-off grand slam to get to 40-40 in the same game that he got his 40th steal. And we were like, well, that was ridiculous. This dude is a superhero. This dude is a movie character. This dude is not real. And then he's like, I got you. That was actually not even the appetizer. You were just smelling what was to come, because what we just saw on Thursday was possibly the greatest offensive performance we have ever seen in a single Major League Baseball game. It is at least one of them. And the fact that it was to get to somewhere that no player had ever reached before is overwhelming. It is an overwhelming thing, as so many things about Ohtani are.
He just said, I'm going to do this now. And then he did it. Now, I don't want to be a party pooper. This is the Marlins. I don't know if the greatest offensive performance of all time can occur against the 2024 Marlins. However,
especially when the last one was against Vidal Brujan, right? So like
a position player. Yes. Yes. However, what I really did love about last night is the talent gap between Ohtani and other Major League Baseball players was so evident, so obvious, and so on display, right? Where it was so clear that he's operating in a league of his own, beyond what the Miami Marlins at this point in time can possibly begin to dampen his skills down. So I think you had a good idea here, which was we should just draft outrageous things about this performance. And so, it's one of the greatest things we've ever seen. I guess before we do that, how did you take this in? Like, what was your experience of taking this in?
Mm-hmm. So I was watching it. You know, I had kind of pre-written this thing in advance of the Ohtani 50-50, but I was still kind of polishing it up this week, expecting that I had a little bit more time than apparently I actually did. And so I was monitoring it, and that first swing of the game where he comes within a few feet of a home run off the right center field wall, I was like, oh boy, we're in for a long one. And the fact that the Dodgers kept turning the lineup over and he kept coming up, and the first home run goes to the moon, and then he goes for the triple and he steals third immediately after the double to get to 50 steals. It was just kept building. I was like, oh my God, like we're heading straight towards this, to the point where now, you know, I'm talking to our editor, Amy. It's like, oh, we're on full alert. Like this could very much be happening. But the other part about this, that as this blowout is ensuing, I start to realize, like, oh no, like he might hit his 50th against the position player. I had that thought earlier in the game. I was like, this is trending with the way the score is, with the Marlins having already used a bunch of pitchers, like they might end up needing to put in Vidal Brujan for the 50th. And I was like, that would be both the funniest thing ever and the most unfortunate thing ever. Now, fortunately, well, unfortunate for our friend Mike Bauman, that was not the case. We still got that later with Brujan, but that was part of the story I was watching. I was like, wait a minute, this might be heading towards something like that. And then the other thing about it was, as you mentioned, he just looked, I mean, it was the spray chart alone from this game, right? He's got the two homers to the upper deck and right, which you only see a handful of times over the course of a season at this ballpark. You've got the homer, the 50th homer, just a line drive to left field. You've got the triple or attempted triple, you know, to the left center field gap. You get to see him running. It was everything. It was everything that Ohtani has become as an offensive player in one game. And yeah, so that's how I took it in. I was sitting here at this desk kind of watching it in awe. But how did you watch it?
I was in the press box at Citi Field preparing for the opposite of Shohei Ohtani, which is Taijuan Walker, and was sitting next to Athletic writer Matt Gelb. And we had the game up when he hit the 49th homer.
Okay.
We were so like, first, oh my God, this is wild. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we get the alert on our phone, like he's coming up and going for 50. And we're like desperately trying to pull it up through the bad press box Wi-Fi to get it up, and Matt gets it up like in time. First pitch, home run. And there is something so beautiful about like taking a home run in like that, where you turn on a ball game and it's immediately a live home run. And for that experience to be Ohtani's 50th was very, very cool to experience. Okay. I'm going to go first.
Yeah. Again, like this is just going to be kind of scrambled. Like there's so much to get to that we'll we'll go rapid fire. So just things about the game yesterday. It can be a statistical thing. It can just be a visual thing, aesthetic thing, quote, whatever. So go ahead.
Ohtani before yesterday was the active player with the most regular season games without a postseason appearance. And the Dodgers would have won yesterday, even if he had been, you know, in the Bahamas. Sure. However, for him to say, oh, no, I'm going to be in the playoffs now, I think is outstanding.
Yes. And by the way, then I was thinking, like, wait a minute, we've never seen Shohei like do a champagne celebration. Like, we haven't seen him pop bottles in a major league clubhouse. I honestly don't remember how hard they partied after Japan won. Like I know obviously there was a celebration, but the vision, as we've seen with the goggles that we've seen with the Guardians and the Brewers, honestly, it's like we've not seen Ohtani do that. Now the Dodgers have opted to delay that, right, until they win the division here in the next couple of days. But that was another thing that I'm now looking forward to. And to your point, the fact that that was also a part of this game is pretty astonishing. That is a great pick. All right. I am going to go with the fact that this was also the Dodgers' single season home run record. This is something that I don't really think anybody was even talking about as he was going towards this, because this march towards 50 steals was also happening. But the Dodgers have been around for a long time and have had some pretty good players. And the fact that he has now the single season Dodgers home run record passing Sean Green. Sean Green, conveniently, also one of the players with a case for one of the greatest offensive games ever, which was his 4 home run game and 19 total bases. Like, that is one of the very few where you could be like, ah, that might have actually been a better day than what Shohei had yesterday. But passing Sean Green there and now being, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff with the Dodgers. Like, he's having one of the greatest seasons at home. I know this was on the road, at home in Dodger Stadium history. Like, his OPS at Dodger Stadium is one of the top 5 that the stadium's ever seen in decades and decades of baseball. All these things. It's just all these like little things that are just he's also doing that it's hard to also notice. And so that's a fun one, though, because Dodger franchise home run record is a huge deal, and it's just like a footnote.
Respectfully, this is not the Diamondbacks or the Mariners or even the Angels home run record, right? The Dodgers have been around since before the Ottoman Empire, or like, this is, they're older than the World Series, this franchise. And Shohei Ohtani has more home runs in a single season than anybody has ever had before.
Yep, pretty good. So what do you got? What do you got next?
I think almost getting the cycle. I think him getting thrown out. Or 4 homers. I'll group those together.
Yeah.
First at bat, it's 2 feet from a homer, top of the wall, laser to right center, almost a homer, almost 4 homer game. Then the triple, almost a cycle to left, where he stretches it to a triple and gets thrown out, which I really found refreshing to see an iota of humanness, of mortality emanating from Shohei Ohtani. It was reassuring for me.
Yeah, because he obviously didn't get out otherwise. So he was granted.
He did get out yesterday. Six for six is deceiving.
That was the time. That's true. That was the time for him to get out. But yeah, it could have also been a cycle. And it couldn't have been both, right? Because the one that was almost a homer was the double. And then the one that was almost a triple was also the double. But anyway, but yeah, it's just, it's outrageous. That is definitely a good one. All right. I'm going to go with just like, apparently, it was his first career 3 homer game. So there's another reason why I felt like I had more time to finish this 50-50 piece. Is it's like, oh, well, Ohtani hasn't had a 3 homer game yet. So we can at least like push it forward a couple days. I mean, even if he gets 2 and he's like, oh, no, I got 3. Now, connected to that is the fact that the third did come off Vidal Brujan, which I know I'm adding in fun facts here. First ever home run against a position player.
Really?
Yes. I believe he had faced a position player a couple of times before. Cody Clemens got him out at one point, which is hilarious.
Do you know why that was a thing? He just has too much respect for two-way players. Oh, he understands what it takes.
That's funny. I thought it was the Angels were never winning by that much.
That's also funny.
Which is also true. But, and actually, truly, probably sort of part of it. but yeah, that was the other thing. As I was like, huh. Has he ever had one of those before? 222 career home runs? I know that was the first one off position player. So congratulations to Vidal Brujan.
Marlins Park becoming the default setting for Shohei Ohtani moments of excellence.
Yes.
Is great so pick. Funny.
Incredible.
In 2020, when Texas became just the default stadium in which all baseball ever occurred, this has me thinking of what is the default MLB stadium, right? And for Shohei Ohtani, it is Marlins Park. This is where he won the WBC with Japan, and now it is the site of the most impressive moment of his career so far.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, he had accomplished so much in his major league career before the WBC and since the WBC. But him striking out Mike Trout is still the first highlight. I mean, we've talked about that moment. Like, that's still the first immediate highlight that you think of.
Remember, he pitches, too.
He does pitch. And the fact that this, he's apparently going to go back to LA now and have some meeting about, you know, oh, what's going on? You going to pitch this?
How's your elbow?
We'll continue. He like threw a bullpen on Wednesday or whatever. Anyway, so that's ridiculous. We guess Marlins Park. What a win for Lone Depot.
Huge for the company.
I mean, when that sponsorship came through, I still haven't adjusted. I'm still not going with the capital or lowercase L. loan. And but now, I mean, they're like, what a win, because this is the spot.
Oh yeah, Marlins were like selling ticket, like honor, like commemorative tickets of the game.
As they should. All right, I am gonna go with LeBron tweeting about this.
Yeah,
a lot of other athletes tapping in here, noticing that Shohei has done this, and not just that LeBron tweeted. We got Embiid tweeting. We got Mahomes tweeting about it. Embiid just tweeting.
Those are baseball guys.
Yeah, well, Mahomes for sure. Embiid, we've seen him at major league games. That's cool. Embiid tweeting, Yup, Otani is the GOAT. Good point. You know, Mahomes had a tweet. But the LeBron tweet is really tremendous. He quote tweeted the MLB highlight and in all caps said, "This guy is unreal," with 4 exclamation points. Wowzers.
Wowzers.
LeBron just dropped a wowzers.
Wowzers.
I mean,
has he ever wowzered? I'm going to see.
So I looked at this. He has wowzered a couple times in his Twitter history, but not in a long time. And so I'm not sure I've ever said wowzers genuinely, but now I will, because LeBron, you know, he's made it cool again.
It's very Scooby-Doo coded.
It is very Scooby-Doo. Which, again, maybe ages LeBron a little bit there. As of course, we know he's turning 40 in a couple of months. This is just an amazing. This tweet got 100,000 likes. But I've honestly been surprised LeBron hasn't tweeted about Otani more. But this was a good moment for him to kind of, you know, log on.
I see your LeBron tweet, and I'll raise you a Magic Johnson tweet. Magic Johnson, who is one of the funniest Twitter users, tweeted, "On behalf of the Dodgers ownership group, I want to congratulate Shohei on being the first in MLB history to have a 50-50 season. Dodger fans, we got a chance to be a part of MLB history." I think you've already been a part of it. Even if you get bounced in the first round, yeah. I think that this is what that is.
Okay.
Did either of the presidential candidates tweet about this?
Oh, that's a good question.
You bring one up. I'm going to do some digging.
I know Manfred like put out a statement officially, and we got some. I don't know if. So we can check on that. I'm going to bring up something that I know else you're going to want to talk about. I have just a couple more that I definitely want to hit. And there's so many more fun facts about the game that we're missing. But two other things I want to bring up. One, I know you'll definitely want to talk about, and another, I doubt you noticed. The first is Skip. We got to talk about Skip. Skip Schumacher, the manager of the Marlins. Now, during the game, remember, when he comes up to face Mike Bauman, they're already up by a million, but first base is open. there is a manager somewhere that is too focused on, you know, making sure, trying to win the game, whatever, that puts Otani on first base, that throws up the 4 like Gerrit Cole and Rafi Devers and says, "Have a walk over there. You can keep your OBP, but you ain't getting another home run against us." And the camera in the game essentially caught, and it seemed like the umps like looked at Skip and were like, "Do you want to walk him?" Skip essentially said, "F that." He's like, "No." And afterwards, he pretty much confirmed that was his mindset with an incredible postgame presser where he was like, "That would be disrespectful to him, to our own pitchers. Like, it is about trying to get him out." And while it was, I believe his quote was, "A bad day for the Marlins, a great day for baseball." And Skip's whole
That's most presser, days.
True. Skip's whole presser was an incredible display of his understanding the situation. And he didn't want Mike Bauman to give that up, but he also wanted Mike Bauman to try to get him out. And the reality is, I think that most pitchers, they want to try to get Otani out, because especially Mike Bauman in this spot, the fifth team he's pitched for this season, like, if he can get Otani out in that spot, that is just as memorable as being the one that, you know, like, he'd rather try to do that and then end up on the highlight reel than just walk him. Because that's going to get way more grief.
So yeah, you don't have to tell me how great Skip is. Of course, you know, number one Skip fan club member.
100%.
What's the other thing you noticed?
The last two things quickly. The one is just a tiny, tiny, tiny thing. So I mentioned, like, monitoring. I'm like, hey, who's going to pitch in this game? Right. I was like, are we going to see Vidal Bruján? Like, what is going to happen? But there was another gentleman in the Marlins bullpen that I was like, oh my gosh, what if this guy comes in and gives up this home run? And it's Jesus Tinoco, who allowed Aaron Judge's 62nd home run 2 years ago as a mop-up man in September for the Rangers, and had pitched two nights earlier, and the Marlins were running out of arms. And I was like, oh my gosh, is this dude going to somehow be at the center of two of the biggest highlights of the 21st century, if not baseball history? But no, he didn't come into the game, so it didn't end up working out. But that was funny. I was like, oh my gosh, please come in, Jesus Tinoco.
Jesus Tinoco, who is 10th in war this year for the Marlins.
Very concerning. Yeah, nice slider. And then the last thing about Ohtani here, Jake, before we take a break. I'm not saying he's going to get to 60-60, but I am saying he has six more games against the Colorado Rockies, which is the worst pitching staff in the league. And I don't think he's going to sit any more games out. The Dodgers are still pushing for the top seed in the National League. Maybe he sits a game at the end of the season. But I don't know, man. Like, this, he's still adding numbers here. We're still compiling. And, you know, this, I guess I'm just saying, the season is not quite over. So 60-60 is probably not happening. But these numbers are going to keep climbing.
I can't wait to be a grumpy old head who tells his grandchildren that whoever their favorite player is not as good as what I saw. And I think yesterday was one of those moments I'll remember forever.
100%. So yeah, if you want more Ohtani stuff, I'm going to write another thing next week, just kind of taking his whole season into stock. As I mentioned, I already wrote about it and talked about how if Mookie doesn't get hurt and he doesn't move to the leadoff spot, this might not happen. I really, really do believe that, because that's when he started running all the time. And obviously he got more plate appearances and all these things. So many things about this season that are incredible. And now we'll get to see him in October as well. Let us know what we missed about this Shohei Ohtani 50-50 greatest game of all time. You can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. But for now, let's take a break. And when we return, let's turn our attention back to the postseason races in progress with just over a week to play. We'll be right back.
Take a look at the playoff picture, because it is September 20th. We're going to do that by looking ahead. What series tickle your fancy this weekend, Mr. Schusterman, that have implications on the October Jamboree?
I think Tigers at Orioles is definitely the one that stands out. And Tigers fans, we're going to talk about you a little bit more extensively here in a second. But just in terms of those two teams, you sent out a very funny tweet, which then aged kind of funnily because of when you sent it. Basically, you tweeted about how the vibe discrepancy between the Tigers and the Orioles, Tigers sweeping in Kansas City, Orioles embarrassing themselves against the Giants through 2.5 games, which is when you had tweeted that. Ultimately, the Orioles managed to squeak out a walk-off victory courtesy of Anthony Santander, quietly one of the greatest switch hitting seasons we've ever seen. So the Orioles
Ohtani can't do that.
He can't switch hit. All right. Interesting.
There you go.
But he probably can't. I would just like video of Ohtani swinging ready.
Yeah.
What does that look like? I'm actually more interested in seeing that than him throwing lefty.
Way more interested.
Way more interested. All right, we'll work on that. So again, Orioles badly needed that. So that's nice that they managed to squeak that victory out. But still, when you consider how these two teams have been feeling, with the Yankees starting to pull away, Yankees losing yesterday also kind of helps in that. Orioles still feeling like maybe they have a chance to get back into the AL East. Probably not. But the Tigers now, this is really their last big test if they're going to stay in this and have a chance here, because next week they play Tampa at home and then the White Sox. So if Detroit can keep this momentum going into Baltimore, Baltimore's still in safe position for that first wildcard spot, but they still would like to start playing better. We obviously talked about them earlier this week. If they are going to be feeling a little bit better going into the postseason, that Santander swing was nice, but also Santander has not been the problem. It's been a lot of other people. So that one, in terms of both teams being compelling is definitely the one that stands out. Obviously, we have the Phillies and the Mets. Will the Phillies really be playing for anything once they get one win? Yeah, they're pushing for that top seed as well.
Let's Twins talk about the Tigers.
Yeah.
Let's do that right now.
Let's get it. Tigers sweep the Royals. We have consistently over the last few weeks, as they have been playing this great baseball, we've said, Tigers, this is really nice. We're really excited for you. We aren't sure you can keep this up. And they keep on winning. They keep on winning. And we, again, they're tied with the Twins now. The Twins dropped 3-4 in Cleveland. They are now tied with the Twins with 9 to go. So it is right there. There is an opportunity for the Detroit Tigers to make the postseason.
The Twins have the tiebreaker. So if they finish tied, the Twins get in over the Tigers.
That is important. Now, how are they doing this? So the key thing about Detroit is the very simple things. Oh, what pitching do they have? And we've said that about a couple other teams. But no team is using their bullpen more. They have, since August 11th, when they have the best record in baseball, 25-10, their relievers have thrown more innings than their starters. Now, some of that is a little goofy because they are using openers very often. So that is part of that. That is part of the calculation. However, it is still an example of how the degree, and this series in Kansas City was an incredible display of how AJ Hinch has been managing to kind of just mash these buttons all the way to victory. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. hits a grand slam in the third inning of the series opener. The Tigers then only allow 5 runs over the remaining 25 innings of the game of that series. They end up sweeping. They're using pitchers in just so many different sequences and orders. And yes, you do hear manager's votes talked about this with Cleveland, and you'll hear Minnesota, oh, these guys will pitch in any role. I mean, the Tigers are taking that to an absolute extreme. It is very Razy. There's really no way around it. That is what it looks like, for better or for worse, but with even more anonymous arms.
Since August 1st, the Mets have the most starting pitcher innings in baseball. Tigers have the fewest. The Mets have thrown, Mets starters have thrown 100 more innings over the last month and a half. 100 more. That's outrageous.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Mets have also been really good, right? Like, that's the other funny thing. Those are two of the best teams in baseball since that time. Yeah. And they're doing it in completely different ways, which is so interesting. Now, the bullpen we've talked about, and Tyler Holton is outstanding. Foley has been good for a couple of years now. Will Vest has really come on. And then they have, I mean, Sean Gunther and Brennan Hanafee. Like, we're really digging deep into some anonymity here. Offensively, though, is, I think, the other interesting part about this team, because you look at the overall season numbers, and there's really not much that stands out besides Riley Green, who is an all-star, and Kerry Carpenter, who is hit like an all-star in his opportunities. But since mid-August, they've gotten above average production from basically everybody in the lineup. They are doing a good amount of platooning. And shouts out to Hunter, who tweeted at us earlier this week, if the Tigers sweep the Royals, can you say Parker Meadows' name on your podcast? Here you go, Hunter. Parker Meadows. There it is. And yes, he has indeed been very good as generally the everyday center fielder. Torque's still striking out a lot, but still, you know, producing a good amount. But it's just enough. And when the pitching has been as good as it's been, you know, they've been able to squeak out these close victories a good amount over the last month and a half.
This offense is so young now that Javi Baez is on the IL. And thank relative goodness that Javi Baez is on the IL, because there's no automatic out every time he comes up anymore.
But it is. It's ridiculously young. I mean, who is the oldest player that's playing? I mean, I guess
every single position player on the Tigers roster right now has under 3 years of MLB service time, except for Jake Rogers, their catcher, who is barely over 3 years. Okay. So it's like none of these guys are post free agency. No one, none of them at all, not even remotely close. Okay. I'm just going to quickly go through it so I could just people hear the names. Parker Meadows, rookie. Kerry Carpenter, second year. Matt Vierling, third year, I believe. Riley Green, essentially a second year. Colt Keith, rookie. Torkelson, that's a complicated one. Chase Young, Trey Sweeney, both rookies. Dylan Dingler is a rookie. Justin Henry Molloy is a rookie. Wensiel Perez is a rookie. Zach McKinstry has been around a little bit. Andy Abadiez, who's 31, is really only in his like second, third full season playing baseball. This team is so young from an offensive standpoint. They almost don't know any better. They're like, oh, yeah, we'll just keep hitting. And then the last thing I want to say about the Tigers that is kind of underrated here, A.J. Hinch, their manager. So A.J. Hinch is the architect, or at least the leader, of the beginning of the Astros dynasty. Now, he gets canned as part of the sign-stealing situation. Really gets, you know, suspended, then fired, whatever. Jeff Lunau, who is the general manager of those Astros teams, is done in baseball forever. He's off somewhere. I believe he's running like a La Liga soccer team in Spain. Good for him. But he, like, the second that he was canned, it was like everyone in baseball knew he was done forever. A.J. Hinch was the opposite. The sentiment around the game was the second that A.J. Hinch is available to be hired again, he will get hired immediately. And that is because he is very good at the job. And boy, have we seen that. For A.J. Hinch to take this Tigers team that at the deadline straight up sold, right? Jack Flaherty, gone.
Yep.
Carson Kelly, their backup catcher, gone.
Yep.
Andrew Chafin, gone.
Canna.
Mark Canna, gone. Yep. Right.
Urshela was on the team. I know he was ended up being, I think, released, but that was another veteran that was around. Yep.
And for Hinch to maintain the energy and the life and the verve in this clubhouse is just so impressive. And the ways that it pushed these buttons out of the bullpen, so impressive. Is he the manager of the year in the American League?
I mean, the Hail Central's got some competition. I mean, people love Stephen Vogt as they should, and Matt Quatraro's going to the postseason after losing 106 games. So there's a lot going on there. And by the way, I would also mention, like, some of these other teams that have made the postseason are also super young across the board, like Kansas City, like Milwaukee, like Cleveland. But Milwaukee, Christian Yelich, they got Christian Yelich at the top there. Cleveland, they got Jose Ramirez at the top there. Kansas City, they got Sal Perez at the top there. Detroit, like, Javi Baez, by status and service time, is technically that guy, but as we know, by performance and by situation, is not. So you look around and it doesn't exist. That player is not there. And so that is why this group, you know, coming together to have this run is really amazing.
So just a quick story on this.
Yeah.
And then we'll move on from the Tigers. So in spring training, I went to Tigers camp. And when you and I build our spring training schedules, we're down there for a relatively limited amount of time, and we're trying to hit as many camps as possible. And so I opted for Tigers camp. Really, it was like over Rays camp, over Blue Jays camp. Mm-hmm. Good pick, Jake.
Nice work.
Oh, boy.
You knew Bo Bichette was going to have a 500 OPS. You were like, this season's not gonna work out.
And I remember going to Tigers camp, and all the people there were like, whoa, like a national writer is like showed up at Tigers camp, right?
Yeah.
And the moment that is stuck in my head from that was like, I'm in the locker room and the playlist was notable in some way. I don't remember exactly why. I asked their PR guy, like, interesting playlist, like, who's on the aux? And they were like, Will Vest is on the aux. Okay. Will Vest, who is
Mariners Rule 5 icon. Yeah, I mean, like, this.
That's how young this team was in spring. Will Vest and his 2 years of service time were on the aux court in camp. Okay. He was like the vet leader of the club. And here they are.
And here's the last thing, just since you mentioned Hinch, because this finally hit me early this week. I was like, man, A.J. Hinch, he's going to make this. Here we go. As things stand now, who would the Tigers be playing in the first round?
Oh, yeah.
It would be the Astros of Houston. We saw Correa against them last year, and we might get a rematch of that if the Twins do manage to sneak in here. But that is I honestly think that's even juicier than Correa against the Astros is Hinch against the Astros. So maybe we'll see that. Anyway, there is the long-awaited Tigers discussion that they certainly have earned.
Other things this weekend, I'm just going to zip through these. Phillies at Mets. Phillies clinch a playoff spot with one win, win the division with two. Mets kicked their butt last night because Taiwan Walker stinks. D-backs at Brewers. I want these two teams to match up in the playoffs really badly. That would be a delight. They seem to always play fun games. The Brewers clinched already.
Yes. Brewers clinched. I was going to say, because Brewers clinched the division. Guardians have a chance to clinch the division this weekend in St. Louis. They just clinched a postseason spot yesterday. So they're going to lock that up. Dodgers obviously pushing for the division. Phillies, we mentioned, pushing for the division. Astros can clinch the division, I believe, Sunday. I think their magic number for the AL West is 5. They beat the Angels yesterday. The Mariners did beat the Yankees in that series finale. They're hanging around 2 back of Detroit, Minnesota, but they don't have the tiebreaker against either of them. So that's really 3 games. Seattle heading to Texas this weekend.
All right. Enough about the good teams. We are going to zip turbo mode through all of the baseball teams that will not be joining us in October. We are doing the Cubs down is the way to think about this. There are teams that will not make it into the field. The Braves, maybe the Mariners. We'll say goodbye at a later date. But we will begin with the Chicago Cubs. And for each team, we will let you know what went wrong, what went well, and check the vibe heading into the winter. Jordan, start us off.
The Chicago Cubs, why are they not going to the postseason? Well, because everyone was fine, but nobody was amazing. And ultimately, the pitching was just not quite good enough, particularly when you have steps back from their veteran so-called stars in Dansby Swanson and Cody Bellinger. And, you know, they had some good things go right. Imanaga was awesome. What a signing. That's a great, what an addition. You nailed that one. PCA breaking out as an everyday center fielder. Ian Happ had another good season. But this is not what it was supposed to look like in Craig Counsell's first year as the Brewers run away with the division with Pat Murphy partying in Milwaukee. So a lot of work to do on the north side.
The Cubs have a bunch of solid players and no elite ones. There are some players out there in the free agent market who are pretty good. Just saying. The St. Louis Cardinals, who had a much more embarrassing season, I would say, than the Cubs. What went wrong? Continued decline from the old dudes at the corners, Goldschmidt and Arenado. Both were squarely average this year. That's a big one. A lot of money invested in those two guys. No one on the offense had an OPS plus over 107. Except for Contreras, who missed a lot of time with injuries. None of the young guys developed into everyday players except for Mason Winn. And all the old pitchers were just kind of meh. Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn, even Sonny Gray was kind of underwhelming this season. Now, what went well? Winn, everyday shortstop with more upside than that. Very excited to see how he develops. The Contreras signing looks great. And the idea that, remember last year, the whole thing was we don't trust him as a catcher. They seem to trust him as a catcher now.
He's awesome. He's one of the best catchers in baseball. And the injuries were unfortunate this year, but not concerned about that. But, I mean, man, just so many of these other kind of second-level hitters just were not taking the step forward. How they handled Jordan Walker this year, oof, so disappointing. And now I just, again, this is so unprecedented for the St. Louis Cardinals in their franchise history to have seasons like this in consecutive years. And the attendance reflects that. And it'll be interesting to see if they actually shake things up considerably this winter.
The last time the St. Louis Cardinals had a losing record in 2 consecutive full seasons, Dwight Eisenhower was president. 1958 and 59.
Now, the Cardinals are 1 game up right now, so there is a chance they can avoid that, but it is very much in play. The Boston Red Sox, again, we're going roughly in order, just of total record. Their pitching was amazing in April and pretty horrific after that. Their offense was very good for the first 4 months and suddenly very bad when they really needed them to carry them.
Ultimately, this is a team that could have used the NL Cy Young contender, maybe.
It certainly could have. I would say trading the Cy Young contender for a favorite for Vaughn Grissom, who was a complete non-factor this season, let alone what is he going to do in the future, is a huge L. And then 2 guys that they invested extensions in, Sedan Rafaela and Brian Bayo. A lot of question marks about those 2 guys moving forward. I know they played a lot. They did post, but the production was not there. And the bullpen was just catastrophically bad over the last couple months, even with Kenley still generally being very good. What went well? Jaren Duran was awesome. Jaren Duran proved us wrong. We didn't think he was going to be very good as a player. He made one incredibly embarrassing, shameful mistake that earned him a rightful suspension, as we know, that ruined his chances of playing 162 games, which he deserved. But otherwise, I mean, he was amazing. He's a great player. He played baseball very well. Tyler O'Neill was awesome, but he might leave in free agency. And I mean, there was still a lot of positive signs on offense, and their farm system is excellent with more hitters coming. But ultimately, how is this team going to get outs? Remember, we thought they had turned around. Oh, Breslow and Andrew Bailey. Wow, look what they've done with Houck and Crawford and, oh, Pivetta and all these things. And Cooper Criswell is getting outs. It's like, listen, I am worried about the pitching moving forward. And they got all these bats coming. I don't know where they're all going to fit. Is there a trade coming? Is there a signing coming? The pressure is on. The Red Sox are going to miss the postseason for 3 years in a row for the first time since 2012. And my understanding is that Boston sports fans are not particularly like,
chill.
That's fine. Hey, whatever. And take your time.
I think the Patriots suck now too. Yeah. So it's even
doesn't help.
More pressing.
Celtics are fine. Don't know about the Bruins. Can't comment on the Bruins. So
tell you anything about that. Yeah. The Tampa Bay Rays. What went wrong? Usually they are in October. I believe it is the first year since 2017 that they are not in the playoffs. That's kind of wild. What went wrong? The offense was just kind of a wet towel. In the first half of the season, Yandy and Randy both underwhelmed. When they hit the midseason mark around 500, they pulled the plug and traded Randy and traded Isak Paredes and kind of reset things for next season. Their catchers, that was something we were really worried about.
Still a problem.
Stink.
I mean, I love Dom Keegan, but if he's not saving them next year, I just don't know how they are going to fix this position.
Now, there's a version of this team that has healthy Shane McClanahan and Jeffrey Springs and Drew Mitt Rasmussen all year and healthy Shane Boss all year, and they're still in the mix more. And that is what I think the vibe check is for next year, is a lot of these arms are going to come back and be fully healthy. Boss was pretty solid after he came back. There's some Taj Bradley things that are good, and then Junior Caminero is generational, right? And the farm system is pretty strong. So I think that the Rays are just going to be in the mix for the division title again next year. And more important than all of that is their City Connect uniforms were amazing. Shouts out to Skady Ray.
The Cincinnati Reds, why did it go wrong? We thought at the end of last season, wow, look at this young infield core. Ellie, Matt McClain, Noel V. Marte, Christian Encarnacion Strand. Look at all these rookies. This is the core of the next great Reds team. Ellie was awesome. Yeah, he struck out a ton, but Ellie is amazing. He has transcended the tiny market that he plays in. He is one of my favorite players that I have ever watched, and I look forward to, you know, watching him for the next 15 years. Everyone else was bad, hurt, suspended. Strand, injured, terrible, non-factor. Marte, suspended before the season, came back, has been horrible since he has been playing. And Matt McClain hasn't played a game because he has been injured. McClain is an impact all-star level player. If they can get him back next year, we can start to visualize an offense that we feel good about. But that sunk them early. And then the veterans they invested in were okay, but not nearly good enough to make up for the deficiencies on offense. And the bullpen was not as good. And then by the end of the season, all of their starters were injured and they were kind of doomed.
I know it's more complicated than this, but if you sort WAR for first baseman this year, the Reds are third to last.
Yeah. Ty France is doing his best recently.
Ty France is doing his best, and I understand why they gave Encarnacion Strand a shot.
Yeah.
But it makes me feel worse about Joey Votto.
Yeah.
Just saying.
That's, I guess. But yeah, Reds, it's kind of getting dicey here. This is the team that has gone the longest without winning a postseason series. It's been since 1995, since the Reds last won a postseason series.
1995?
Which is by far the longest in baseball. That's essentially the new version of the Twins streak.
I was like a fake beat.
You were, a couple weeks old, basically. So that's concerning. The good news is, like, with Rhett Lauder and the Jesus Traft to Chase Burns, I like the pitching that is coming together. Hunter Green had a great season, but I still am worried about how this roster is going to be actually look like a contending team anytime soon. So, Reds, good luck.
Speaking of bleak,
the Giants have been officially eliminated, and they've made the postseason one time since 2016. Now, that one time was pretty cool, but other than that, it has been as average and uninspiring as it gets.
behind Logan Webb and Blake Snell, the pitching was really bad. And the problem was Snell like missed a lot of time. And so it kind of thrust a bunch of dudes into roles that they just weren't ready or good enough for. I kind of like Hayden Birdsong, pretty fun player, but he's not someone that you can rely upon at this point. Their outfield was not great. Jung-hoo Lee getting hurt really early was a big deal.
Yeah, that really stunk. He was looking pretty good.
Jorge Soler was kind of a disaster. They pulled the plug on that in the middle of the season. Camilo Doval took a huge step back in the bullpen. However, what went well? Matt Chapman.
Great.
Looks like a foundational piece.
Love it.
Tyler Fitzgerald. Shortstop with a 148 OPS plus. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, Elliot Ramos had his singular moment. More on that later. In Good, Bad, Ugly. But All-Star, yeah. So, you know, some things went well. But again, the record speaks for itself at this point. They might be heading towards 500 again. And, like, this is a team that just spent so much money again and have been trying to spend it, and it's just not working.
We'll have a longer conversation about their front office situation when the winter comes, because it's super funky. All right, last one before we take a break. Texas Rangers, who won the World Series last year, and I cannot remember a more underwhelming, just forgettable, you know, defense of a title than this. The offense took a huge step back. Evan Carter was nothing. Wyatt Langford had a slow start. The bullpen was pretty bad besides two old dudes in Kirby Yates.
Right. And that part Robertson. Is so that part is wild because they signed David Robertson and Kirby Yates to fix the bullpen, and those guys were awesome, and the bullpen still sucked. And the pitching in general, you know, when the healthy, not healthy, like Eovaldi was disappointing. Scherzer was on and off, and I don't know. You know, this version of the season, had they not won the World Series last year, would not be that shocking. But because of how we felt about that offense after last month, and even for most of last season, it was like, well, at least they'll be able to score. And this offense just straight up wasn't very good. So the good news is Seager was still awesome when he played. You know, Kumar Rocker comes up. That's exciting. They have a couple other pieces take some steps forward. And DeGrom is back now. So there's some things to look forward to. Chris Young just got an extension, actually, which is fine. That makes sense. But we'll see. I'm curious how they respond to that this winter. Last winter, they decided to kind of rest on their laurels and not spend any money. Maybe they blamed it on the TV stuff. Maybe not. This is pretty embarrassing for the Rangers to for a team that seemed to be like, all right, we're here. We spent the money. We have all these stars. And now it's like, well, you're a losing team. So I'm not sure what happened there.
Extend Chris Young? He's already 6'10". How tall does he need to be? You know what went well for the Rangers? The Texas Rangers went to the White House, and there was no news about it, really. Everyone went, nothing weird happened, and it was just kind of a footnote blip, which I would have taken the under on that. Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll do the other teams. Oh, hey, everyone. Welcome back. Let's just keep on rolling. The Toronto Blue Jays, also eliminated, also bad. Jordan, what went wrong up north?
Two very simple things. Their bullpen was so terrible, especially in the second half, which I know at that point they had already sort of given up, having traded away their veterans. But the one thing, one of the most shocking, I think, individual player seasons that we had was Bo Bichette being awful. This is someone who had been so consistent in the early part of his career, and just he was hurt too, but he sucked. And so that immediately sent this offense into a very bad place in the first half, to the point that they couldn't get out of it. And the pitching wasn't good in the first half. And then all the offense from everyone not named Vlad just wasn't good enough for those first few months. And they ultimately decided to flip it to next year and try and run it back with Vlad, with a healthy Bo, with a lot of these pitchers. There was a lot of encouraging things that happened after the deadline where they played well. The younger players came up, Spencer Horwitz, some of the guys they traded for. Some good things happened down the stretch, but Bowden Francis was fantastic, and Vlad just looks tremendous. This will be a top five MVP finisher. But talk about pressure. I am so interested what we are saying about this team a year from now, because they're just kind of saying we want the mulligan. This was a disaster. We get it. We're just only going to trade the short-term guys. The fans, again, this is a team that had won 90 games 3 years in a row. They've been in the postseason. It has to go right. They have to add again this winter. This is a really, really important and interesting team as we move forward.
Shohei, by the way, he's on his way. to Toronto. Still, he's on that plane.
Yeah. Yeah, he will not be available. Maybe they will pretend to get Juan Soto this winter. Seems unlikely.
You know who should trade for Ohtani is the Marlins. Think about how good he'd be playing in that park every day. The Pittsburgh Pirates were interesting for longer than you maybe would have expected. But what went wrong? The offense stinks. Like, the offense is but fourth worst position player group by WAR in Major League Baseball. Outfield particularly terrible. Michael A. Taylor was like the worst free agent signing of the year. He's still on the team. He's played about as poorly as you can play and not get released or DFA'd or whatever.
It's
pretty bad.
No, it was a bad one, right? You know, it's a relatively low stakes. But again, for a team that isn't going to spend much, they have to get those smaller signings right, and they did not.
Ke'Bryan Hayes,
that's
bad,
the biggest
and
one,
they have him for 8 more years or whatever.
That's the biggest one. And some of their pitchers just ended up. I mean, Bednar, right? What a massive step back for him. I know closers are volatile, but he had been so reliable, and he had. The bullpen was just had some really ugly stretches. But yeah, man, in June, they were playing great ball and Skeens was dealing and all that was. But it's just Pirates are in a bad place. Now, good news.
Skeens is amazing. He's singular. He is a hook. He puts butts in seats. He makes you a contender if you have him. Don't let the opportunity pass you by. I think we feel pretty good about the Pirates' ability to develop some pitching.
Yeah, with more they coming. Show, Bubba Chandler's coming. I like the arms that are coming, but how is this team scoring runs? They need to do so much to convince me of that. But Skeens is one of the best pitchers in the league, so that's a good place to start.
The Washington Nationals, who I watched way too much of this week here in Queens, what went wrong? Every starter has an ERA plus under 100. They had no above average pitching. Their catcher, Kaiber Ruiz, I think is just DC Ke'Bryan Hayes, where they're locked in for a while and there are big questions about his offense. Speaking of offense, this offense was cratered in the second half once they traded a lot of those rental pieces. Joey Meneses, remember him? He's just in Rochester now. They just optioned him.
Yeah. Again, though, not quite like Boston, but it seemed like the Nats had made a lot of progress on the mound in the first half of the season, and that has really fallen off over the last couple months. But, you know, some progress on the farm. James Wood arriving is exciting. Dylan Cruz arriving is exciting. Luis Garcia had a really nice season. We saw some of their trades are looking already pretty good with Jose Tena. I really like that. Abrams had a good first half. We'll see what he really kind of blossoms into overall. And they don't have to pay Patrick Corbin anymore in a couple months. So that's exciting. But we'll see. Let's see. Are they going to do they think they can win next year? Does Mike Rizzo want to, you know, actually start to spend money again? Or I guess the learners, do they want to start spending money again? There are plenty of free agents out there. Could they just go after Bregman? Maybe they try to get Soto. Is there a move here where they signal we are trying to win again in the same way that when they went back and signed Jason Worth and said, I know we're not good now, but we will be good soon. Is there a version of that they try this winter? We'll see.
If there's one thing I've learned about the Mets and Brewers this year, it's that, like, not having anyone who sucks play a lot goes a long way. Like, Tyrone Taylor, I think about all the time, right? Like, he's maybe the worst position player on the Mets when they're all healthy, and he's totally fine. The Nats are just not at that point right now. However, go sign Sean Manaea and Christian Walker.
There is a path here for the Nats to start competing sooner than maybe you realize.
The Oakland Athletics, what went wrong? The pitching's just undermanned. They took a big step back. Zach Eloff and the farm system still not in a great place. However, let's just focus on the positive here. This team banks.
Yeah. We've been saying it for months. Brent Rooker and Lawrence Butler, one of the best 1-2 offensive combos in the entire league. And yeah, they were so bad in May and June that the fact that they played well in July and August didn't really get noticed as much. But there's an offensive group coming together here. And while the farm system still isn't awesome, and I don't really know who's going to pitch, and Mason Miller's awesome, but that's one inning every couple days. That's the issue beyond everything else involving Sacramento. But just on the field, that is kind of where I'm at with Oakland.
Mark Kotze, the A's manager, deserves manager of the year votes, in my opinion.
If you could get more than 3 votes, you probably would get some. The Angels, Does Ron Washington get any manager of the year votes?
Do you know what went wrong? Shohei Ohtani left your team, and you didn't spend any of that money.
All right. Yeah, I mean, they're like, we knew it wasn't going to be pretty this year, and it was really, really bad. It was really bad. Sure, some of their young hitters took some steps forward. Zach Neto, great. There's your franchise shortstop. But, I mean, even Zach Neto is not, you know, necessarily performing like an all-star, and that's, like, the best thing that's kind of happened to them this season. Ohtani really tailed off, unfortunately, down the stretch. Hopefully Christian Moore can come up soon and save them, and you got some things offensively that you're looking forward to, but it's still one of the worst farms in baseball, and I don't know what you do. We can say, oh, is Perry the why does he deserve an extension? I don't know how anyone would fix this, and it's bleak. It's bleak. And by the way, if the Tigers make the postseason, the Angels will be in sole possession of the longest postseason drought in baseball. And imagining them getting to the postseason again anytime soon is very, very, very challenging.
Yes. Next up, the Colorado Rockies. What went wrong? Well, they're the Rockies. All right. The Miami Marlins. No, I'm just kidding. It's hard to pitch in cores. The Rockies don't have that personnel yet. Nolan Jones, who we really liked last year, took a big step back. That was very disappointing. On the positive side, Brenton Doyle.
Brenton Doyle is an amazing thing. Tovar is an awesome player, incredible defender, and like a legitimately good hitter. Like that's a good shortstop to build around. They had a couple other hitters kind of step up, and they have some pitching prospects that are tracking well, actually. But it's this, even further by Rocky standards, this was a particularly horrific pitching staff. This pitching staff, what you can park adjust for cores, and it was still the worst. So that's how far they have to go to have any chance of being remotely competitive anytime soon.
The Miami Marlins, who made history yesterday by being in the building when Shohei Ohtani made history yesterday, all their pitchers got hurt early in the year. Then the new president of baseball operations, Peter Bendix, quickly realized they were not good enough to compete. I think he was right about that. So they traded Luis Arraez, and they traded everyone away at the deadline, and they had the worst offense in the National League. Remember, Tim Anderson was on this team for a while. He finished the year, his tenure in Miami, with a 28 OPS plus.
And zero home runs. He is still atop the Why Haven't You Homered Yet leaderboard.
The reason is he's not on a team, actually.
Yeah. So that sucks, but also it kind of went to plan because it gave Bendix a room to execute the extreme deadline sell-off, bring in the prospects and players and leadership that he believes in, hopefully. Still such a long way to go, but you do look, Sandy was throwing 99 miles an hour in a bullpen the other day. Like, there is a pitching staff here in the second half of next year that could look pretty freaking spicy. The problem is they can't score. I've said that about a few teams here. So how they score, how this offense becomes anything good with a farm system that still stinks is going to be quite the challenge. But Peter Bendix is going to do his best.
Xavier Edwards, very fun. And last but not least, the Chicago White Sox.
But literally least.
I don't really want to break them down in the same way. They won the first game of the series against the Angels. Lost game two. And then a brutal 13-inning defeat. That was a huge game that they dropped. They now need to go 5-4 over their last nine to dodge history's bullet.
Yeah. 36 and 117. So it's a pretty bad record. Garrett Crochet, what a thing. Congrats to him. All right. Well, we're over an hour, but it's Friday, and we still have to do the Good, the Bad, the Ugly, because that is our job. I would never go Friday without doing the Good, the Bad, the Ugly. I can't continue into my weekend if I have not given you the Good, the Bad, the Ugly, but we'll keep it pretty quick. Let's start with good. My good this week is Brent Rooker. I'm just going to give you a very basic fun fact. You know, I mentioned earlier, Brent Rooker, Lawrence Bell are really awesome. So as I'm doing all this research for Shohei Ohtani, you know, having arguably the greatest DH season of all time, doing a bunch of stat head and seeing, sorting by all these different categories. Oh, look at this. How does he stack up with Edgar Martinez, David Ortiz, Frank Thomas, Jim Rice, Rafael Palmeiro, Yordan Alvarez, all these great DH seasons we've seen, Victor Martinez, 2014. And I kept doing these searches and okay, there's Ohtani and there's Brent Rooker. Jake Mintz, highest OPS plus by a primary DH ever. Number one, Shohei Ohtani, 2023. Number two, Edgar Martinez, 1995. Number three, Shohei Ohtani this year. Number four, Travis Hafner, 2006. Number five, Frank Thomas, 1991. And number six, Brent Rooker on the 2024 A's. Brent Rooker is having an all-time designated hitter season. That is ridiculous. And he deserves all the love in the world. And when the A's came out with their funny renderings for their Vegas stadium, and that scoreboard said that Brent Rooker would be hitting 303 in the imaginary future where he is playing in Las Vegas, we all laughed. Well, guess what, Jake? Brent Rooker is hitting 304. And he is very, very good. So there you go. What's your good?
My good is what happened in the Orioles game yesterday. You tweeted about it. Anthony Santander, tie game, bottom nine, runner at first. Long at bat against Ryan Walker, the Giants.
Ryan Walker's nasty. This was big time.
He lofts a high fly ball. And about a second into the ball's flight, that eventually lands in the seats, the Baltimore Orioles stadium operations crew presses the alarm, the siren button that signals a home run in Camden Yards. And as the ball continues drifting to the outfield fence, it then becomes a question whether or not it will get out. The outfielder parks himself up against the fence and is gonna, like, almost catches the ball. And as that becomes more obvious, the stadium ops crew then turns the volume down on the home run siren until it reaches the seats, in which point they turn it back up.
So it's good. It's one of the funniest things ever. If the ball doesn't go out, like, I don't want to be extreme here. Does someone get fired?
No one gets fired, but the Orioles are eliminated at that point. Like, they're just
like
up.
The karma of it is if the more Orioles of the lose problem that game, than the actual with the home run siren going off with Canna robbing the homer. Yeah. Yeah. God, it's so funny.
Whoever's in charge of it should have to meet with the manager, like when a player hits a ball off the wall and pimps it.
My bad this week is McCovey Cove Dave. I encourage everyone to go read the story on SF Gate by friend of the program, Alex Simon, who interviewed McCovey Cove Dave. Basically, this is a guy who's in a kayak out in McCovey Cove and was in out there again, as he is for most games. And
his name is Dave.
His name is Dave.
And where is he usually?
In McCovey Cove.
And where does he go by?
McCovey Cove Dave. It's good.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Thanks.
And when Elliot Ramos, thank you to Ian who emailed us for calling us out on the pronunciation there. Elliot Ramos, apologize. First right-handed splash hit, huge deal. And McCovey Cove Dave is there. He's been waiting for it, and he catches it. And you would think, wow, what a thing. What a momentous piece of memorabilia that Elliot Ramos would probably like to have. And McCovey Cove Dave has decided, no. This is literally about me. And I would just say, reading these quotes, this is pretty much 80 grade main character energy. And I don't want to go too much deeper into this, but my main takeaway from this is there's a version where McCovey Cove Dave is like a beloved figure that people is like a bastion of Giants fandom that everyone's like, that guy's awesome. He's so did. And instead, by making it about him and saying things like Elliot Ramos hasn't earned this ball yet because he's only been on the Giants for 2 years and he doesn't follow me on Twitter, is a pretty epic self-own when there is an opportunity for you to be a cool person that a lot of people like. So it's bad. So that's my bad. But yeah, everyone go read. This is a pretty stunning level of me guy energy from McCovey Cove Dave. So anyway, bad.
I'm going to be quick. Taiwan Walker. Yeah. All right. What's your ugla?
My ugla is... really not much more to say. My ugla is what happened to Julio Rodriguez the other night. And we talked about Victor Robles trying to steal home on a 3-0 count with the bases loaded and two outs. that was a truly horrific base running decision. What happened to Julio Rodriguez, I genuinely believe, was the other side of the base running Tuut Bland spectrum. Because when Randy Arozarena throws his bat accidentally swinging at a pitch to strike out, and the bat goes flying to towards Julio Rodriguez standing down the third base line, and he tries to get out of the way like a regular human being does, that is, it's just the most ridiculous sequence of events that somehow has never happened. And yes, he looked like a nincompoop when they throw down and get him out of third in this extra inning situation. But this is ugly. It is not bad. I guess some version of it is bad base running, but it is more ugly than bad. And that is why I'm putting it in my ugly to defend Julio in a very embarrassing moment, in a moment that could only happen to this team, the Seattle Mariners.
Nick Prado is my ugly.
I have no idea what you're going for this. Nick Prado is in AAA, right? I see. No.
Nick Prado, I'm going to tell you.
Is he up now because Vinny's hurt?
I'm going to tell you. Nick Prado, once a top prospect with the Kansas City Royals. His stock has fallen quite a bit. He is now 25, almost 26. Does not seem to feature in the future of the Kansas City Royals as he once did. Jordan, I'm going to ask you a very simple question. Don't look it up. Has Nick Prado appeared in the major leagues this year?
Oh, man. I mean, what you're asking me this, and I would guess no.
Has? Yes, he has appeared in the major leagues. He has appeared.
He has in the major leagues this year. Once?
Jordan, how many plate appearances does Nick Prado have in the major leagues this year? Zero. Okay. How many pinch running opportunities does Nick Prado have in the major leagues this year?
Zero.
How many defensive substitutions has he had this year?
Maybe one.
Zero.
Okay.
Though he has appeared in the major leagues. Nick Prado's entire season in the big leagues was one position player pitching performance.
What? Really?
Nick Prado was up with the big league team in June for a brief time. He threw one scoreless frame in a 10-1 loss to the New York Yankees in the ninth. He was then sent back down and never got a plate appearance, never appeared as a first baseman. The entirety of his 2024 major league season is one scoreless inning as a position player.
That is miraculously ugly. It does appear that he was recalled on June 11th and sent down on June 14th. And as you mentioned, he pitched and that was it. That is incredible. That is an incredible thing. How does that, I guess service time, he's still got a couple of days. So congrats to him on that. Wow. That is a great note to end on.
Anytime I can surprise Jordan like that with an ugly or vice versa.
You blew my mind there. That was big time. If Nick Prado, wow. Okay. I'm flabbergasted. That shocked me more than Shohei Ohtani. We're done. This was a long pod, but we had so much to get to. You can blame Shohei for giving us an extra 25 minutes at the top of this show. But we hope you enjoyed. We talked about a lot of teams, and we will talk about even more teams as the baseball continues this weekend. 1 week to go, 9 games remaining for every team that's not in Ohio. Everyone have a wonderful weekend. Thank you to Hillary Georgiou for producing, filling in for Andrew Hartz. You can email us at baseballbarbicast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. And we'll be back on Monday. More teams will have clinched. More teams will have been eliminated. And the season rolls on. Any final thoughts, statements?
No.
Okay. Goodbye.